Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm Alistair Beckett-King.
And I'm James Shakeshaft.
And this is the second half of our 100th episode live special.
Yeah, that is the quickest way we could work out to say it as well.
So in this section, I'm going to take over and I'm going to tell you a story which I think it has everything.
It's got loads and loads of one thing.
What's that?
Winkle shells.
Yeah, and if you want to know why there are so many winkles, keep a listening. And there may also be a few more penetrating questions from Voice of the People, Chris Cantrell.
He's grilling us and penetrating us.
And I'll fade the music in right there, James. That's what I'll do. We're back. Second section, on time. I've never seen an audience return so swiftly after an interval. Well done. Mm. Round of applause to you for that. Really showing us what being on time could be like. So I have a story for you, James.
Oh, go on.
I would like to take you back to Thanatos,
what?
The Isle of the Dead.
Oh.
Thanet.
The Isle of Thanet.
The Isle of Thanet in Kent.
Friend of the show.
Kent. Okay, I may have built it up a little bit, but it's the home of Margate, which we have touched upon on the pod before, and of course, Dreamland, which I think we've spent way too much time talking about.
I spent way too much time there. So.
I'm just thinking about it.
Yeah.
I can tell you're thinking about it now.
Yeah, I used to play the Indiana Jones arcade game. The Indiana Jones Temple of Doom one, do you know that? Where he has to whip children in order to save them.
So, I went to Margate last week to research something for this podcast. In the year 1835, a man named James Newlove was digging in his garden with his son Joshua, and the spade slipped out of his hands into the hole. He had opened a chasm in the ground.
Whoa.
An abyss, a black void of nothingness.
That's really good. If you're digging a hole and you come across a hole... Job done.
He was quitting.
Yeah.
So I think he did what any of us would have done. He got a rope. He tied it around his son, Joshua. And he lowered his dear boy into the mystery hole to see what was down there. The history doesn't record whether Joshua came back up with the spade, his one job. But he came back up telling tales of a cave beautifully adorned with shells. They had discovered the Margate Shell Grotto.
What?
Which is quite a famous tourist attraction. You might have heard of it. But anyway, we have mentioned it on the podcast before.
We have mentioned the Margate Shell Grotto.
That's one of the stories of how it was found. The other is that some workmen working for Newlove moved a big stone in the earth and discovered a hole beneath it. But his daughter Fanny also claimed that Joshua had found it before that on his own by just crawling through a tiny crevice. We don't know.
Like a sort of shell Batman.
Yeah.
Why do we fall, Joshua? To discover shells. Criminals are a superstitious, cowardly lot. I shall become a shell.
Margate Shell Grotto is 200 square feet of subterranean mystery. I should also say, 200 square feet, not that much. It sounds like quite a lot. That's a relatively small space because of how cubes work. I don't need to explain cubes. There isn't time.
Oh.
Have you heard of squares, James?
Go on.
Imagine a square.
Whoa!
You've just visualised a cube. Anyway, you go in down the serpentine passageway. Every wall is adorned with shells, creating bizarre patterns that are unlike anything you've ever seen before. There are 4.6 million shells embedded in the walls. You go down the serpentine passageway, then the passages branch out around what is called the rotunda, so you can go left or right. Whichever way you go, it ends up in the same place. It's called the dome. So you're standing under the dome and you can look up now and you can still see the sky through a tiny little hole. So that's where they found their way in.
Oh.
Then down another passageway to what is called the altar room.
Ooh.
Which used to have a vaulted ceiling and a fancy wall, but bloody Germans bombed it. Not the ceiling. That was just a landlord knocked it down so he could have a floor or something.
He altered the altar room.
He altered the altar room. But wow. The altar is still there. It's around about the size of a bathroom cabinet.
Has it got shells on it?
Everything's shells, James. I can't explain how many shells there are.
Well, you did. It's 4.6 million.
It's 4.6 million. I've got a little map here. The problem is I can't find an online version of the pamphlet that came out in the 19th century about it, so I have to use the one from the Shell Grotto, which, as you can see, has a word search on the back.
Is every word shell?
I'm just going to hold this just for the people in the room. You can see a really extraordinary, spooky Indiana Jones point-and-click adventure game style map.
Do you whip children to make them good?
The panels have all been interpreted in various ways. There is supposedly a turtle, which doesn't look much like a turtle, and an Ares that looks a bit like an Ares, and a fleur-de-lis, and a phallus.
That's French for fleur of lis. It's Lee's flower.
There's supposedly a phallus. I don't think it looks that much like a phallus. But the majority of the shells are winkles. See the link? A little winkle? You see it? They are flat winkles. bad luck. Which are yellowy orange shell. Mm. Unfortunately, years and years of gaslight has dimmed the brightness of it. But you can imagine how beautiful it must have been when sort of yellow orange shells made sort of shifting color patterns over the walls.
It sounds like a sort of a shell magic eye.
Yes, in that it was briefly popular. And I'm still just as enthusiastic about it. I'm very good at magic eyes, not to show off. I can do that. I once did one from across the street.
What?
I saw one in the window of the works and I was like, it's a dolphin.
They were all dolphins.
On that, yeah, they were. But on that occasion, it was also a dolphin. Now, the first mystery is, what? And the second mystery is the winkle shells. Because those winkles, you can't get them at Margate Beach. Hmm? They're not there, the little winkles. The nearest place where you can get winkles like that is Southampton. Can you imagine whoever made it being like, Maddie, I'm going to make a giant cave covered with shells. All right, you're going off down the beach. No, I don't like those shells. I'm going to Southampton instead.
We're getting shipped in from Southampton.
I'm going to get 4.6 million shells from Southampton.
This is not a Kentish accent,
no, it's not.
By the way.
I've realised it is the voice of the accent from the Pirates memory game sketch in Little Britain.
Oh.
Including the fact that his wife is named Marjorie, I now realise. Only when I said it did I realise.
I have an alternate take on why there aren't any of those winkles on Margate Beach.
What's that?
I think he hunted them to extinction in order to make his mad cave.
There are no winkles today. Nearly a winkle. Just because I can see James creeping towards the belief that this is not supernatural. We got two ghosts.
Mm?
It's haunted by two ghosts, a blue lady and a green lady.
Is the green lady just the blue lady in yellow
green,
light?
In green, yes.
Right, okay.
They are very similar looking ladies, that's all I can tell you. The uses to which the Shell Grotto has been put are unknown, but bound to be supernatural. It's been hypothesized that it is a Roman temple, a Phoenician temple, a temple created by the Knights Templar, some kind of Margate Hellfire Club.
Oh, yes, I like a Hellfire Club.
I think the evidence for that is basically someone went in there and went, this would be a good place for a Hellfire Club. And that's all the evidence that it could have been a Hellfire Club. Or it could have been created by a man called Thomas Bowles, who said that he created it. So those are the possibilities. There is some reason to be sceptical of Bowles, which is that he claims to have made it as a child, and there are stories of him sort of going down to the beach with a little trolley. It's like, oh, you're all the way to Southampton, five-year-old Thomas Bowles, you've got 4.6 million shells.
Yeah.
It's not happening, Thomas, you're a liar. So it was probably a dean hole, which I think is a really good insult that we could start using. Like, screw you, dean holes. And a dean hole is a type of sort of cave that's, I think, unique to chalk, which is what the rock is around there. You bore down and then get in there and start digging out to create a little network of caves. Mm. So what probably happened was they dug down into the dome area I described and then started digging the rotunda. And then later on, someone found that and expanded it to create the altar room and the serpent that I described.
And then later, another person came with too many shells.
I've got 4.6 million shells that I don't know what to do with.
I've got an idea. Have you heard of wallpaper? Like that, but shells.
The enigma of the Margate Shell Grotto is explored by Patricia Jane Marsh in her book, the Enigma of the Margate Shell Grotto. So I strongly recommend.
Is that that's going to be on the shelf with like the Enigma code? Like
alphabetically, yeah. So grotto comes from the Latin word crypta, meaning underground passageway. Probably the origin of the word crypt, I guess.
Yeah.
And a grotto is like a decorated cave. And James, who do you associate most strongly with grottos?
Jesus, did you say?
Cheese. So just for the benefit of the tape, someone in the audience just said that they associate cheese most strongly with grottos.
In answer to the question, who do you most associate with grottos? The answer is cheese. Not even Mr. Cheese or Ms. Cheese.
Would you care to explain yourself while I repeat what you say into the microphone?
Cheese grottos. No, it's not a thing in England.
No, we have shell grottos, obviously. German cheese grotto.
Yes, I've never heard of cheese grotto.
It's just
grotto.
Edams now. I'm imagining like mini baby bells stuck like the shells. Kleine Kinder Bell. Do you have bigger baby bells? I'm just wondering, because we only get the mini baby bell over here.
Really,
you get the maxi baby bell. Yeah. Or bell.
The small ones, baby bells.
The small ones are called baby bells.
baby bells.
Baby
bees.
Baby bell.
Okay, I'm going to do that link again. James, what do you associate most strongly? Don't laugh.
Now it's cheese.
Now there was a bit cut out. I wonder.
Now it's cheese.
What do you associate most strongly with grotto? Forget it.
It's Father Christmas.
Father Christmas.
Santa Claus.
Is what I thought you were going to say, and I was going to say, no, it's not that.
What? It's cheese.
It's cheese. Right, now we have to keep that whole bit in the edit just for it to make any sense. Of course, we all associate grottos with the ornamental hermits of the late 18th, early 19th century. I'd like to reintroduce you to friend of the podcast, Edith Sitwell, and the ugliest book in the history of literature. Wow. The book I'm holding is The English Eccentrics by Edith Sitwell, and it recounts. In the late 18th, early 19th century, it was the golden age of the grotto and, of course, of the architectural folly, because in those days people were, as you know, crackers. And landowners started putting out adverts because what's the point of having a little grotto if you don't have a horrible old man living in it? And so they started. And you might think, oh, we'll just we'll get a little man in. If we like it for a few weeks, we'll stick with it. Every one of the adverts is like, man needed for 7 years.
There's no probationary period
to see whether they will be suited to it. This is how Edith Sitwell puts it. Certain noblemen and country squires were advertising for ornamental hermits. Nothing, it was felt, could give such delight to the eye as the spectacle of an aged person with a long grey beard and a goatish rough robe doddering about amongst the discomforts and pleasures of nature. Yes, it is a truth universally acknowledged that a man in possession of a fortune will eventually hire a horrible old man to live in a hole. They were like the YouTubers of their day. All that money, they didn't know what to do with it. They were just paying homeless people to fight for them.
What do you get? A man who has everything.
A really old, weird-looking guy
to wander around the garden.
The Honourable Charles Hamilton, during the reign of George II, put an advert in the paper that said he wanted a hermit to continue in hermitage 7 years, where he should be provided with a Bible, optical glasses, a mat for his feet, a hassock for his pillow, an hourglass for his timepiece, water for his beverage, and food from the house. He must wear a camlet robe, and never under any circumstances must he cut his hair, beard, or nails stray beyond the limit of Mr. Hamilton's grounds or exchange one word with the servants. He lasted 3 weeks.
Oh, what do you think got him? What do you think he fell out?
Fingernails.
Fingernails. That was the one I was thinking would be the most difficult one.
He only lasted 3 weeks, but Paynes Hill Park, where he had lived, remembered him for up until at least 2008, I can find, with their annual Hunt the Hermit. I don't know what the Hunt the Hermit was. A gentleman in Preston, Lancashire, for £50 a year, succeeded in getting a guy to live completely underground for 4 years of the desired 7. How do you enjoy that? How do you enjoy just knowing someone is underground? You can't. The point is, he doesn't get to see them. He just to be like, there he is. He's down there. I can tell.
Well, would you get a second hermitage, like a side hustle hermitage, if you were meant to be underground and just like dig out a cave to another
just adjoining your way
grotto?
Out.
Yes, yeah.
Into a
and get to an adjoining grotto and take on there. Do people compare their hermitage?
You're like the Uber of.
Yeah.
You are disrupting this market, James.
Yeah, I'm just going to be like gig culture in Hermitage. You just do it for a quarter of an hour. Here, they've got some people coming around. They need a hermit for a bit. Don't cut your nails.
Well, actually, you've prefigured what happened, which is that people started becoming freelance hermits. not everybody waited to be asked.
But they don't get the benefits
of
an hourglass. You've got to bring your own hourglass, but it is tax deductible.
In 1863, in Newton Bergsland, near Ashby de la Zouch.
Which is Ashby of the Zouch.
In Leicestershire, one freelance hermit had 12 hats and 20 suits of clothes.
Good lad.
Yeah, which doesn't sound that hermit-like, but this is what she says. Each one of them was adorned with an emblem, a symbol, a device representing a motto, because this guy... He strikes me as the kind of guy who doesn't accept the mainstream narrative pushed by the so-called British Biased Corporation. And his grotto was a garden, really, where you could walk around the paths and there were little stations along there with different names, like when you're queuing at Disneyland. And they had names like the Oratory, the Sandglass of Time, the Henpecked Husband Put on Water Gruel, and God Save the Queen. It's like, it's what I imagine the Festival of Brexit would be like if it had happened. And the symbols on the hat have names like Odd Fellows, Bellows, Helmet, Patent Teapot, Wash Basin of Reform, and of course, Beehive. So you can see the theme is quite clear. And they mean things like without money, without friends, without credit. To draw out the flavour of the tea best, union and goodwill.
Hmm? No, you leave it.
That was patent teapot. That one's just a bit of tea advice.
You leave it and don't squeeze the bag.
Don't squeeze the bag. You get tannin out.
Don't squeeze the bag. Yeah, all the tannins out. Just leave it in there for a bit. You were telling me to put the milk in first. Next, I'm not having it.
I just think anyone who has a political or philosophical message written on a hat should be suspect. I think. I once saw a guy on the tube. This was years ago, and he was wearing a mask, a face mask, which in those days was a sign that the person was a crackpot and now seems perfectly reasonable. But he was wearing a face mask and an aviator hat. And around the rim of the aviator hat, there was like a strip of ticker tape paper with a handwritten red ink pen message, which went all the way around so I couldn't read it. But it started with the words, "Dear white women."
Oh. Well, so you didn't need to read on.
I didn't need to read on. But the hermit I really want to tell you about is a freelance hermit named Lord Rokeby. He was the son of Septimus Robinson, who is here purely because of his name. Lord Rokeby, a.k.a. the amphibious and carnivorous hermit of Hythe. Yeah, we're back on the coast of Kent. You are right to be excited. Every day, Lord Rokeby, whose appearance was very much like that of a benevolent troll, walked very slowly, carrying his hat under his arm, to the sands of Hythe. He was followed on these expeditions by a carriage and by his favourite servant, dressed in very elaborate livery. He erected a little hut on the sands at Hythe, about 3 miles from Mount Morris, and from this hut he would dive, with commendable firmness, into the sea, remaining in this with the utmost persistence until he fainted and had to be withdrawn forcibly from the water. That is the maximum amount of time.
Wow, yeah.
To begin with, I thought, that is ridiculous that you would every day swim until you fainted. On the other hand, have you ever been, like, shopping or something? And you've had a nice time, but then after it, you're like, I can't be bothered going home. I'm really tired now. And you just want to be like pass out and be dragged home by a servant.
Yeah, that's the worst bit about going to the beach is the packing up at the
exactly.
end.
Exactly. You don't have to do it if you're
sand
unconscious.
Everywhere. No. I should do that next holiday.
Eventually, he got sick of going down to the beach every day, so he built on his own grounds a bath fed by an icy pond, which was witnessed by a gentleman called Mr. Kirby, who, as far as I can tell, was just nosy. So he was visiting and he saw the house and he was just looking at the grounds and the servants were like, do you want to come in and have a look? And so he went in and had a look and he approached the bathhouse and they were like, oh, you can't go in there. And he said, are you sure? And he went, yeah, all right, in you come. And they let him in and he found Lord Rokeby unconscious. This is how he describes it. We proceeded and, gently passing along a wooden floor, saw his lordship stretched on his face at the farther end. He had just come out of the water and was dressed in an old blue woollen coat and pantaloons of the same colour. The upper part of his head was bald, the hair of his chin, which could not be concealed even by the posture he had assumed, made its appearance between his arms on each side. I immediately retired and waited a little distance until he awoke. When rising, he opened the door, darted through the thicket, and, accompanied by his dogs, made directly for the house. Just a normal day in the life of Lord Rugby.
Yeah.
Just, you get out of your bath, you have a little nap, face down on the ground. You wake up, bomb it into the house.
Follow me, dogs.
His sister, Fidget Montague. small bow. Fidget, Elizabeth Fidget Montague, it was a nickname because she was quite fidgety. She was so embarrassed by him. She wrote, I shall never be able to stand the joke of a gentleman's bathing with a roast loin of veal floating at his elbows. Yes, that's right. He didn't get out of the bath to eat. Other records say that he only drank beef tea. And then she says that he had the meat in the bath with him. So now I think, is the bath the tea? That's what I'm asking. Is he in the tea and he is the tea? Thank you. Thank you for heckling Bovril Bath. BB. So he apparently, as he went on, he became stranger and stranger, and he wouldn't get out of his bath for anyone. For anyone less than the Bishop of Armagh, it says, which is specific.
Yeah. Like, did he actually come around one time?
I think so. Presumably he did, and he was like, all right, I'll get out. Get my blue robe. Who are you? The Bishop of Enniskillen? Keep walking. He was apparently very friendly, but he would greet you in his bath. And this is his sister found out about it, and this is really embarrassing. Someone who didn't know she was related to him told her how weird he'd been. And she was like, oh, you're at a party or wherever. And there was this weird guy who wouldn't get out of his bath and kept offering us veal.
Wet
from
veal.
The water. Wet bath veal.
Bath veal.
Although she did say, it was nice veal. So,
pretty moist.
He gave what he did not eat of it to her and some others. To be sure, he was the particularest gentleman as ever she heard of, but he was very good-natured. Although some people said that the meat was raw and that he was a cannibal.
Oh.
Lord Rugby! I have one more hermit for you, a female hermit now.
Mm-hmm.
Miss Celestina Collins, who was in the habit of, and this has to be a direct quote, otherwise I don't think we can put it out. You'll see why. She was in the habit of inviting 30 fowls to sleep in her bed. Her favourite amongst these bustling and restless companions was an immense cock, whose spurs, as a result of age, had grown to the length of 3 inches. This cock shared her affections with a huge rat, and these two inseparable companions were present at all her meals, until, at the end, grown savage because of the shortness of the rations, the rat flew into a rage with the cock, and Mrs. Collins, in her turn, flew into a temper with the rat, striking him a blow which, to her great remorse, killed him.
Oh.
It's the age-old story.
Yeah.
Rat meets girl. Girl meets 30 birds. Girl kills rat.
Rat falls out with big cock.
Girl punches rat
to death. Ah, wow.
And that is the story of Margate Shell Grotto and the Ornamental Hermits.
Nice. Very nice. Thank you.
So now we need to move into the scoring section and we need to elect 4 lore people. Do we have any volunteers? Because this is confusing enough as it is.
Hello. What's your name?
Hayley.
Hayley,
friend of the German lady. Welcome.
And the show.
And indeed the show. Hayley. 4 lore person. The first category I'd like to score in is supernatural. Sorry. And I would like to remind you how spooky the vibe is. I know I've only got 2 concrete ghosts.
Is one ghost in 2 different lighting states?
That, James, is a little thing I like to call theatre.
What do you think? Out of 5?
Out of 5. I would have to say 2, 1 for each ghost.
So that should be 1.
One for each.
But I would like to raise it to 3 as it's a live show and to reward you for all your hard work on the 100th episode.
A pity 3.
Pity 3!
I'll take it!
Thank you very much, Hayley.
Thank you very much, Hayley. 3. We need another 4 lore person for the next category.
What's your name?
Yes.
Alex.
Your name. Yeah, that's. I realised how confusing that was. Yeah. He's come up to do naming. I said, what's your name? Okay, so what are you going to judge it for naming, Alistair? You're going to want to defend yourself.
In the category of names, Alex, what are you going to give me?
Okay, well, we had...
Fidget
Montague.
That wasn't a given
name. James Newlove. Oh! we have never excluded nicknames. Ashby de la Zouch. I can't even say that.
Ashby de la Zouch.
We've got all of the Phoenicians. We've got James Newlove. Bit sexy. Grotto. The word grotto. Grotto. It's like Italian. It's got a little... Grotto. Makes you think of cheese.
Baby Bell.
Baby Bell said in the voice of David Bowie.
This is David Bowie's Baby Bell.
There's nothing too impressive in there.
The 100th show.
I don't think we can get a pity score for every score.
Four.
Oh, come on.
Yes. Thank you very much. Oh, yeah, that way.
Thank you for the a well-earned four. Do you like this podcast? And the next category is going to be number of shells.
Number of shells.
Yeah, that's the sound of ABK raking it back.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Chris.
Hello, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
It could be four for every million.
What? Is it 400
four for every million? No, that's 16...
It's 4.6 million shells.
Exactly, so 4.6.
But we don't round up. So it's a four. No, it's we don't fun. Round up. Yeah. We don't round
We're
up.
We're rounding up. I'm
we
sorry.
We don't round up.
James, the four low person has rendered his verdict.
4.6 over 0.5, so it rounds up to 5.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that is maths.
Yeah, we don't round up.
That we don't is maths, up. Says
We famously don't round. Round up. We famously don't round up. Did you used to be my neighbour in real life?
I did.
Okay, cool. Hello.
But how did I not make that connection?
I don't know.
I've listened to all 99 of these.
And you've not thought, that's coming up through. They used to come through the floor. That noise. Oh, nice to see you again.
Nice
hello.
To see you again. Yeah.
Thank you very much. And we need a volunteer to score the final category, which is why?
Why?
We've got a volunteer.
Did you used to be my neighbour? I say to everyone.
My category is why? And what I mean by that is, why was the shell grotto created? We don't know. It is an enigma. Why did any of the hermits do any of the things I described? Why did anybody want a dirty old man living in a hole on their land?
There's so many questions and they're all why?
Why?
I mean, that's three whys.
That's three whys.
So that's three so far.
Oh. He's wise to you. He's wise to you.
Otherwise, I was just breathing in there. Otherwise
could include.
Why did the... What was wrong with the rat?
It's three.
It's three. You're giving me three.
No, actually four. It's absolutely bizarre.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't
it's
it?
A big double why, I think.
Oh, why are they not Winkles, you know?
Why Winkles? Why yeah.
Why Winkles?
Now he's helping me. Yes.
Well, you five.
Five?
Yeah.
Okay, you're the four law person in the audience. He's the four law person. Oh, I do need that bag though now. I do need that bag.
So James is getting a bag now because friend of the show.
The ghost of Peter Underwood.
The ghost of Peter Underwood got in touch.
And gave us some books. Exorcism! Exclamation mark.
Yes. It's a musical.
It's the book of the musical. So, Hayley, thank you very much for being the four law person. You can have a copy of...
And also a big thank you to the grandson of the real Peter Underwood who sent us these books.
Yes. It's very spooky getting messaged by a famous ghost hunter who's been dead since 95.
Yeah. Thank you, the grandson of Peter Underwood.
Yes.
And thank you, Peter Underwood, for writing the book Exorcism. Questions from
yeah,
Chris?
Yeah, Chris has got a few more questions.
Okay, we've got three more questions, then we're going to get out of here.
Rosanna 20736 screams, was the most discussion over whether to bleep the swears, you set of...
I think he riffed the end of that. I don't think that is what was actually
that's not
asked.
Word for word,
was
no.
There any discussion about us bleeping swears or not swearing? I think in creating such a niche podcast... Alienating people who don't like swears would have been a bad idea.
But the big problem with the bleep is it always sounds like we're saying the worst possible
the worst
swears.
Yes.
And we rarely are. Next question from Chris?
Yeah.
Okay, next question.
Sidera says, are there any lost episodes? Oof. Well, I mean, I suppose that's different to my question would be, what? How bad does an episode have to be for you not to wear it, is my question.
We'll find out next week.
I don't think we have to put up with this kind of thing, James.
There are lost episodes, I think.
Yes, we recorded an episode at Edinburgh with Ed Hedges about a cockatrice.
Oh, yes.
And the sound didn't work.
The saffron cockatrice. That's where I learnt about the difference between 48 hertz and 441 hertz.
Mm.
It sounds terrifying when you try to put them together because they go out of sync with each other, which is kind of normal. You can edit around it until people laugh and then it just sounds like that hole that sounds like hell.
And I did one about the Angel of Mons.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just really boring. It's just very boring. I think it's a fascinating story, if you don't know it. Fascinating story. Not the way I tell it. Nope.
Actually, I was looking as well. The very first, originally, we were going to do two stories an episode, and they were going to get pitted against each other in the different categories. But
oh, yeah.
We went off that idea quite quickly.
Do we plan to have some kind of reason for the rating system being there?
Yeah, I think that was what the ratings were for, to be like, oh, this one scores better on naming than the other one.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
But we kept...
Next question.
Yeah, more questions.
Got another question here. Do you think that giants exist? And if so, do you reckon that one of them... James's mum about 40 odd years ago. Question specific for Alistair here.
Okay.
Do you think that you'll ever see a ghost through windows that have been double glazed?
No.
It just doesn't feel right, does it? Another one is about the sort of the rating mechanic. What's going on there?
Yeah, we've already done that one.
We've done that then. That's it.
Yeah. There, yes, well done, actually. Thank you, the listener.
You know who you are.
If you don't, we can't help.
But if you do know who you are and have your own debit or credit card details,
yes,
you can join the Patreon.
That's a good link.
Patreon.com/lawmenpod.
Yeah, and you get access to extra episodes and exclusive videos.
And you can join the Discord if you want. 100 episodes, eh, James?
101.
101-ish.
Yeah. What on earth are we going to talk about next?
So before we started recording, James, you said that you used to be a hologram.
Yeah, so I casually dropped into conversation how I used to be a hologram at the Manchester Science Museum.
Would you care to expand upon that at all?
I was briefly for a time a hologram at the Manchester Science Museum. I don't see how that needs any more explanation. It was, I think there was kind of like a diorama of like a sort of an 18th century lab, and I was walking around as a hologram, and I think it was people who were doing something with nuclear powers or something. I had to say computer in a German accent. I was a German. Not for the first time, actually, I've played an early German physicist. I think I might have actually played the same physicist twice.
Really?
In two different unrelated...
Talk about being typecast.
Productions.
Which German physicist were you playing?
I can't remember his name, but he was a big influence on old Stevie Hawking's. And...
Yeah. Is it like Niels Bohr or someone like that?
No, a bit older than that. This guy famously taught himself to swim from a book. That's like, and that was the scene that I was dramatizing in this Stephen Hawking's documentary that I featured in.
Did you have to swim?
Yeah.
But like someone who had just read about it?
Yes, yes. I'd swim like I'd never swam before.
That's how I swim anyway.
And that was the one where... Oh, yeah. Well, this is now a much longer story. That was the one where they gave me long johns that weren't long enough, if you catch my drift. And three separate women came and laughed at my genitals. They were brought in because, like, I put these long johns on. And the thing about a long johns, if they're not long enough in the body, they're short johns. You could see my short john. And the wardrobe woman kind of looked down, stifled a giggle and said, I better go get someone. And she got her sort of the wardrobe mistress to come in and looked at it, and then she went and got the producer who came in and looked at it, and in the end I had to sort of
Do it in a mid shot.
Take the top bit of the long john off and tie it around my waist with the arms dangling.
It's just some protective dangling there to conceal.
Yes, the john.